Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Paul Douglas with you on a Wednesday. I think it's Wednesday. Thank you for tuning in. Got a lot of good stuff packed into the show, and I hope you agree. Just trying to take one day at a time, like everybody else. I saw something. I want to start the show with this because it made me laugh, and God knows we all need to laugh right now. This was a post from the Wall Street Journal. Japan's theme parks have opened back up again. That's the good news. The bad news is they've banned screaming on the roller coasters across Japan because that helps to spread coronavirus. They are actually telling people who come into these theme parks, please scream inside your heart. Okay.
Wait, isn't that an involuntary reaction? I don't think that was the right word I just used, but isn't that just something that happens that comes out of you in the moment?
I think so. But, I mean, we've all been screaming inside our hearts since March, so we've had pretty good practice here in the United States. Oh, man. Yeah, please scream inside your heart. All right. Tell that to a neighbor. I don't want to hear you complaining. Just do me a favor. Can you complain inside your heart? Not share it. I don't know if you caught this, but Tom Hanks under fire from some on the right for some comments he gave earlier in the week on the Today Show. And I don't know. I didn't find it objectionable. I was not turned off by what he had to say. You decide. I want to replay this clip. It only goes about 2 minutes. Listen to what Tom Hanks had to say.
What has lingered here is this societal question, really. Of doing our part. Not everything I say has to be tied to somehow, the war effort back in the during World War II. There was a sensibility that permeated all of society, which was, do your part. We're all in this together. Doing your part meant there was a tiny bit of stuff that you could do in order to aid the ongoing stasis of an effort that had no sign of its conclusion. World War II went on for an awfully long time, a big portion of everybody's lives. They didn't know that it was going to come to an end, and we don't know what's going to happen with COVID-19. The idea of doing one's part, though, should be so simple. Mm-hmm. Wear a mask, social distance, wash your hands. Mm-hmm. That alone means you are contributing to the betterment of your house, your work, your town, your society as a whole. And it's such a small thing. And it's a mystery to me how somehow that has been wiped out of what should be ingrained in the behavior of us all.
Yeah.
Simple things. Do your part.
Yeah, it does seem basic. How do you think the country's responded, Tom?
Well, I think a huge majority of Americans get it. Look, there's no law against ignorance. It's not illegal to have opinions that are wrong. I think you flout a number of realities when two and two don't add up to four. Granted, this is a mysterious thing where, eight people are asymptomatic. They don't know they have it. They don't feel bad. There's all sorts of things that come along in it. But there is a darkness on the edge of town here, folks, and it is... Let's not confuse the fact. It's killing people. Okay, you can argue what the numbers are. Ah, it's not killing that many. The numbers have gone down, et cetera. Yeah, that's right. It's killing people. And you can say, well, you know, traffic accidents kill an awful lot of people, too. That's, traffic accident happens because a lot of drivers aren't doing their part. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not using their turn signals. They're mm-hmm. driving too fast. They're not paying attention to their environment. I don't know how common sense has somehow been put in question in regards to this.
That was Tom Hanks. A recent Pew Research Center study found that 65% of Americans say they wear a mask most of the time, 2 out of 3 Americans, when inside a business. 25% of Americans, roughly 1 in 4, and about a third of Republicans believe that masks are not effective in reducing the spread of coronavirus, or they don't have an opinion. Last week, the USA broke records for new coronavirus cases in a single day when we crossed 50,000 in a day. That was shattered yesterday, by the way. 60,021 new cases reported. 3 million total COVID cases. And here's what got my attention. We got to the first 1 million cases in 98 days. We went from 1 million to 2 million cases in 43 days. We've gone from 2 million to 3 million cases in just 28 days. So, you know, I think all of us should be a little bit paranoid. And Tom Hanks referencing World War II and the struggle and the sacrifice, all of us are being asked to sacrifice this year. And like it or not, this is the biological equivalent of World War III. This enemy, invisible and microscopic, but yeah, it does want to kill us. And we have to save as many lives as we can going forward while judiciously, responsibly reopening the economy. When we come back, a chat with an historian who can put some of this into perspective next. Paul Douglas, 91 degrees. It's not the heat, it's the humility. Oy. Yeah, man, is it sweaty? And you wonder what the pioneers did. I guess they did what any self-respecting Minnesotan would do and go jump in a lake, right? I mean, you do what you have to do to keep your cool. A friend of mine passed along a message that got my attention. And the message went like this. Paul, some people are upset with stores that have signs that say masks only. Now, imagine what it felt like when those signs said, whites only. And again, as a white guy, I can't imagine that. I'm trying to wrap my brain around what that must have been like and trying to empathize, a quality that may be lacking today, right? We have rights and opinions, and we like to shout our beliefs and opinions, but putting ourselves in other people's shoes, empathy. Not sympathy, but empathy, just trying to understand somebody else's perspective and point of view. And during these troubled times, I found it helpful to step back and try to get perspective. So we reached out to an historian at Hope College in Michigan who studies slavery, race, and the Civil War. And I just found some of his words to be very, very compelling, timely, and on the mark. Joining us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline, Professor Fred Johnson. Professor, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be on the program.
You wrote a post, and you were quoted, and it resonated with me. You said, and I'm just going to lift this right from your article. You said, being an American citizen is like having a relationship. If all you can do is accept the good parts of the relationship and can't deal with the hard stuff, I question the sincerity of your relationship. We need to look at the warts, the dark spots, and all. Can you expand on that? What did you mean by that?
What I meant is that, and particularly speaking as an African American who has served in the U.S. Marine Corps and, you know, believes in the Constitution, I believe in the ideals of the Founding Fathers, I am very much aware of the fact that Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, James Madison, James Monroe owned slaves. But that does not, while I am not happy about that, that does not discount the vision that they had for establishing an independent, free, democratic republic. So while we should not go around expecting any human being to be perfect, likewise, in my relationship with the United States, this is an ongoing work, striving toward a larger vision to achieve the founding principles that were included in what Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration when he said, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. It's tragic that Jefferson himself could not live up to that, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't strive toward that. And that's what I mean about the good part was what Jefferson articulated. The dark spots were that he failed to do so on a pretty colossal scale, but it doesn't mean that we throw out the vision just because he was too imperfect to fulfill it in his own lifetime.
Very interesting. As a Christian, I believe there was only ever one perfect person walking this earth.
That's right.
People inherently are flawed. I'm flawed. You're flawed. Everybody has flaws. But that doesn't detract from the genius, and I don't use that word lightly, the genius of the founding fathers and their vision to create a constitution that has stood the test of time. America has always been a self-correcting experiment. We veer off in one direction, the wrong direction. We usually get back on track. Will we get back on track this time around, Professor?
My optimism tells me that, yes, we will. I want to believe that we will. My historical sensibilities tell me that we have, as you alluded to, we have on many occasions gotten back on track, if you want to put it like that. You know, there are so many things that have happened in our history. You know, sometimes the getting back on track took a lot longer than we wish it would have. But the main point is that eventually we got there. You know, I am not a big fan of getting to what I call the Olympics or the competition of who suffered the most under what conditions. Because as far as I'm concerned, whether it be African-American slavery, the removal of Native Americans from their land, the oppression that was imposed upon Irish Catholics in the 1840s, or what happened to, you know, Japanese Americans who were interned in the 1940s in World War II, or what's happening right now to immigrants who are being housed in detention, for-profit detention centers, and being separated from their children. None of it should have happened. But we have the capacity in this country, when people finally muster enough courage and willpower, to do the right thing. Our system allows for that. There are countries on earth that I've traveled to where people may want that to happen, but there's no possibility of it happening because the system just doesn't allow for it. And we owe that to the vision of the founding fathers for establishing a constitution that was to be a living document that could be changed, that could be amended, and that people, as to borrow the phrasing of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on April 3rd, 1968, right before he was assassinated, he said something to this effect, that the greatness of America was the right to protest for rights. And I'll tell you, I had a number of students a few years ago, well, it's been a while ago now, but they were going to go protest, you know, at some military facility that had a relationship with some Central American countries, and they were trying to get me to go along with them. Well, Professor, come with us. And I tell them, no, I'm not going to go. I want you guys to go, though. I want you to protest. I want you to scream to the top of your lungs and wave your placards around. I said, but while you're down there protesting, I also want you to remember this much, that while you're down there doing that, there's some 19-year-old walking a guard post along the 38th parallel in Korea buying you the right to do that. Freedom isn't free. So somebody's paying the price for it. And the exercise of their First Amendment privileges, we want that to happen, but we also want them to remember that someone is walking a guard post, you know, keeping the bad guys away so that they can do that.
Amen to that. With this, I have a son in the Navy who's about to be deployed for the third time to the Middle East, so I appreciate his sacrifice. I appreciate every service member and former service member who gave up their freedom, gave up their ability to have a normal life and even risk their lives to keep us free. And thank you, Professor, for your service as a Marine. Certainly don't take that for granted.
Well, thank you.
I want to ask you this. I mean, I think most Americans, regardless of politics, have a problem with injustice and can
right.
smell injustice when they see it. And, I mean, the United States was born because of oppression and tyranny and taxation without representation. We pushed back against the British. We thought the system was unjust. The protests that are going on now, people of color, and it may be hard for some listeners to wrap their brains around. It's hard for me to understand the pain and the trauma that came to a head when George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis. And can you talk to that and just the subject of injustice throughout the history of the United States and how people have pushed back on injustice?
Sure. Well, you know, when we talk about the thing we need to understand is that when people are talking about liberty and freedom in 1775 and 1776, it meant what it means today, but it also meant something different. I mean, you have to allow for, you know, over a span of 200 years, words may either change or they may not even be used anymore. So Americans of the 18th century could, with a straight face, talk about how with the imposition of the 1765 Stamp Act, that they were being oppressed and that the British were overreaching and that they were feeling like it was a tyrant who was trying to enslave them at the very moment that they're benefiting from the oppression and enslavement of African Americans. Now, it's not like they didn't notice this, because there were people who found it to be rather odd. In fact, I think it was Samuel Johnson. I'm paraphrasing here, but the great writer Samuel Johnson said that he found it odd that the people who were screaming the loudest about liberty were the ones who were enslaving, to use his word at the time, Negroes. So there were people who saw the utter hypocrisy of Americans asking for or demanding liberty at the same time that they are denying the liberty of other people. But then if you move forward, many people will, of course, use the American Revolution, and appropriately so, as pushing back against the tyranny of England. But even more acute sense, if you look at what happened in 1786 with the rebellion of a man named Daniel Shea. Daniel Shea was a Continental Army officer. He fought in the Revolution. He was there the whole time. He was decorated. He believed in the cause. He sacrificed for the cause. But at the end of the war, he went back to Western Massachusetts. He's on his land. And Daniel Shea was a poor farmer, like a lot of poor farmers at that time, because, you know, at the time, an agricultural society, your wealth was your land. Well, we owed a lot of money and taxes and debt to the British. I mean, just because they lost the war didn't mean that they forgave the debt. And so what happened was that Eastern financial institutions in the Northeast, and particularly in Eastern Massachusetts, were taking people to court, throwing them in debtor's prison, confiscating their land, confiscating their animals. And if you're a poor white man in 1786, all you got is your land and your animals to take care of your family. They take that away, and then they hit you with court costs as well. So now you're being forced to pay for your own imprisonment. For Daniel Shea and those poor farmers in Western Massachusetts, they looked around, and it turned out that they had the same situation they had under the British, except now it's American financial interests doing it. So they rose up in rebellion one more time. Now, they were put down, but that rebellion is what led people to understand that the Articles of Confederation were too weak to govern. That's why they went to Philadelphia in 1787 to revise the Articles, but eventually drafted an entirely new document called the Constitution. The Constitution itself has provision for three pro-slavery provisions that guarantee slavery in America. So at the same time that the preamble says, we the people, I always tell my students that in 1787, when we say we the people, we must ask the question, who's we? We does not include Native Americans. We does not include black people. We does not include women. We, quite frankly, doesn't include most white men, because for voting in America, voting for a long time was dependent upon how much land you own.
Right.
And so most white men were not even having all that much of a great time. You know, and eventually this thing, just as you've alluded to, as you move forward, you know, during the Adams administration, there was the Alien and Sedition Act. There was the Alien and Sedition Act when John Adams, usually because of what was going on in France and the disputes between France and England and what trying to get us involved in what the events after the French Revolution, John Adams was trying to suppress free speech. And people saw that as being oppressive. And then, of course, there's what happened when you get to, as I mentioned, the 1840s with the potato famine that brought so many Irish Catholics to the United States, and people were going around saying that, you know, they were going to be destabilizing American ideals and infecting us with what do they call it, popism, and not listening to the Constitution. And the same thing happened in the aftermath of World War One, with people that had, you know, German sounding last names anglicized mm-hmm. their names. And so it seems like we are a nation that prides itself on immigrants. At the same time, we are a nation that for some reason hates immigrants that come to us. So we have a lot of work to do. And I take pride in the fact that we passed the 13th Amendment, but it's also tragic that the 13th Amendment that ended slavery had a loophole that allowed for the criminalization of black people and then the eventual rise of what they call chain gang labor systems. So we have to constantly be on guard for this. When I was an undergraduate student studying in Maryland, I used to go downtown on the subway, and I would come up, and there was a sign on the side of the National Archives building that just always inspired me. It said, "The price of freedom is constant vigilance." You cannot afford, in a democracy, you simply cannot afford to not be paying attention, not a single day, because when I took the oath being sworn into the military, it was to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Clearly, the people that put that oath together recognized that not all of our enemies will be coming from the outside. So we have to be very much aware that this beautiful, wonderful, visionary thing called American Republican democracy, to maintain it, we got to be vigilant and we got to be participating.
Well said. Professor, thank you. I could listen to you for hours. Appreciate the perspective and weighing in. Professor Fred Johnson from Hope College in Michigan. Sir, we have a lot of work to do, but really appreciate you joining us today on CCO.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Best wishes, and thank you again for your service as a Marine. When we come back, a deep cleansing breath and a little bit of weather therapy, talking about the heat, severe weather, tropical storm Fay may be heading towards Washington, D.C. That's next. Yeah, we're all hot-blooded today. And if anybody asks, yeah, it's hot enough for me. Thank you. I prefer the surface of Venus where it's 800 degrees, but this is close enough. Heat index 100 in the shade right now in the Twin Cities. And I believe today, the ninth day so far this summer, above 90. Typical summer, the entire summer season, we get 13 days above 90 in the metro. Already up to 9. At the rate we're going, I think we'll have 20 to 30 by late September. We shall see. That's just my gut. Could be nausea. Last year, we only had 4 days in the 90s because it wouldn't stop raining, and that kept us cooler. But we've seen some crazy heat waves, nothing to compare with the heat wave of July 1936. Kenny Blumenfeld from the DNR, who was on yesterday, shared this post and reminded me of just how nasty hot it can get here. 90 degrees between July 5th and the 18th of 1936, 14 straight days in the 90s, 8 days with highs at or above 100. The heat wave included 5 straight days with highs at or above 105 in the Twin Cities, got up to 108 air temperature on the 14th. 7 straight nights where the low temperature didn't fall below 80 degrees. Now, we didn't have the humidity levels. For whatever reason, maybe it's a symptom of the warming climate. We didn't have the crazy dew points, which would have made it even worse. But Mark Seely adds that back in 1936, back in July, citizens found it hard to cool down properly in any circumstance, causing heat exhaustion and heat stroke. Up to 900 deaths just in Minnesota linked to the excessive heat back in July of 36. And Seely writes, by any measure, this is one of Minnesota's worst weather events on record. Yeah, 900 deaths. I didn't realize that. By the way, it, you know, that old adage, it's not the heat, it's the humidity. There's a lot of validity to that. And there is more water in the air that's creating more flash floods. You know, we see the numbers of these extreme 500 and even 1,000-year floods going up over time. But the average number of days with dangerous heat and humidity has doubled since the 1980s and the 1990s, according to NOAA. And if your insurance rates are going up, I know mine has gone up, according to NOAA, the average annual weather and climate-related damages in the U.S. have quadrupled. They've gone up 4x, quadrupled, since the 1980s. A new paper at the American Association for the Advancement of Science says heat waves are now occurring three times more often than they did in the 1960s. Summer nights have warmed nearly twice the rate as summer days. And 80% of the monthly heat records are probably due to human-caused climate change. July, yes, the hottest month of the year. It gets hot here. But we seem to be turbocharging that heat. A couple of other nuggets here, weather-related, that got my interest. June, we saw a tornado drought. Only 50 tornadoes nationwide. That is the fewest tornadoes in June across the nation since 1952. Colorado State University routinely goes out on a limb I wouldn't go out on, but based on ocean water temperatures, various oscillations and phases and patterns in the atmosphere, they are predicting 20 named storms. This year, 20 named storms. Now, that would include tropical storms and hurricanes. If that comes true, if that verifies, 20 named storms would be the most since 2005. And again, you combine hurricane evacuations with COVID-19, how can you safely evacuate people inland and observe physical distancing, wearing the masks, you know, prevent more problems with coronavirus? And you know that's going to happen. At least three major hurricanes predicted to strike the United States, Category 3s. So we'll see. But there's a tropical disturbance right now lurking off the Carolina coast, and there's a 70% probability, according to the Hurricane Center, that it's going to become Tropical Storm Fay. And if it does become a tropical storm, it would be the earliest sixth named storm on record. We've already had five named storms. This would be number six. So, again, you just connect the dots. The pattern seems very favorable for a very active year in the tropics. And we will keep our fingers and our eyes crossed and hope that everything turns out okay. One thing I found fascinating, the European model, which often does a better job with the track than some of NOAA's models, takes Fay up the Chesapeake towards Washington, D.C., or possibly Philadelphia, before pushing it back out to sea. So, absolutely bizarre. And a recap, excessive heat warning through the evening hours. That means a prolonged period of dangerously hot weather, combination of heat and humidity combining to create a dangerous situation where heat illnesses are likely. Drink plenty of fluids, stay in an air-conditioned room, stay out of the sun, check up on relatives and neighbors. And again, heat stroke can be fatal if not caught quickly. That's where the skin is dry, rapid pulse rate. Often the person impacted is delirious. You absolutely want to get that person into a cool space, if possible, and call 911. The good news is, this is the worst of it today. We are going to cool down closer to average tomorrow, and especially Friday into the weekend. But we're going to see a lot more 90s this summer than we have in recent years. An old-fashioned summer. Hey, the NHL is getting ready to play hockey again. Want to talk to Mike Max for the latest on hockey and the Twins. That's next. Can we all agree on Steve Miller, Steve Miller Band? Yeah, I think we, well, I hope we can. Hey, this is the twilight zone of sports. This year, we'll be telling our grandkids about 2020. And a couple of quick things before we get to Mike, and I want Mike to weigh in on this. Oakley, the sunglass people, are designing a new hybrid mask helmet to be worn by NFL players this fall. The masks include an N95 internal filter to block out particles. That will be something to see, a hybrid mask helmet. And the NBA has purchased 2,000 of these rings. They're called Aura rings, O-U-R-A, Aura rings, that track sleep levels, heart rates, and activity, and they can even flag COVID-19 symptoms based on a ring that you wear on your finger. Apparently half of the NBA players have agreed to wear these rings, but there are privacy concerns. They're worried they're going to be tracked. Absolutely bizarre. I'm excited that NHL hockey, God willing, is going to kick off again starting August 1st. Maxie, welcome back.
Yeah, Paul. Yeah, August 1st is when they plan to play games. July 26th, they can travel. Next Monday, they can go back to camp. And that's, you know, it's as concrete as we're going to get right now. And then they probably won't come back. If they can get through this, they probably won't come back till December or so. You know, again, they'll have a few months off because they're not going to start the season at the regular time that they normally would in October. They're toying around with a lot of stuff with Oakley there. And one of the concerns that they've got, I think, in the NFL, it's just in specific to the training camp coming up, is the heat. And if you have a mask on, you know, what does that do? Or, you know, is it going to fog up? And there's a lot of R&D that's been done, obviously, with them. But to see if they can, you know, kind of perfect something there that it not just – not just about being safe, but you know, is it manageable? Is it efficient? Does it work for everybody? Is it different climate? So those are some of the things that they're looking at right now. And of course, you know, football also has to look at you know, this season. If you go into it with no fans, the salary cap is always based on how much money you've got in the total pot. You know, and so you know, you're gonna escrow money. What are you gonna do? That needs probably be negotiated out here before they get back to training camp, because obviously there's going to be different revenue. And when you're based on a salary cap, a sliding scale, a lot changes, and they're going to have to get the Players Association to agree to some of that.
Now, my understanding is the NHL players don't have to play, and they don't have to give a reason why. Just like Major League Baseball, they have the right not to play. Tell us about Exhibit 3. Do you think there are going to be a lot of players in the NHL who don't come back?
I don't think there'll be a lot, because I think that what I was hearing this summer anyway was, in general, players said, yeah, we want to play. We're going to vote this in. We understand this isn't the, you know, there is no great scenario here. But in general, the consensus was amongst the players, and it wasn't that they don't have concerns. They do. They've got concerns like everybody does, and it's you know, it's not exactly social distancing friendly. Now, if you play well, at least. But the consensus was that they had, you know, they had talked it through and decided that you know, the overwhelming amount, which is why they got a deal done, said let's play. So I don't think, you know, yeah, you'll probably see some. And, you know, there's so many things. I was talking to a guy today that owns a business, and he was talking about he lost one of his best employees, and she's healthy, but her mother is so susceptible, and she still lives with her mother, and she can't afford the rest, so she can't work anywhere. And so, you know, you're going to have things like that that are unique, but that are going to come into play with sports as well.
Maxie, it seems like the Twins are doing everything in their power to protect the players. I read with great interest the retrofit at Target Field. Everything obviously outdoors, trying to space the players out, taking advantage of all of Target Field. 113-page manual of safety protocols.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they're taking all those steps, doing everything in their power to keep everyone safe.
Yeah, and if you like that, you ain't seen nothing yet. Wait till the NFL comes out with theirs, by the way. Really? They have been incredibly diligent and thorough. But yeah, you go out to Target Field, and it's just such a strange feeling because it's there's this practice going on down in the field, and there's some guys are off up on underneath the concourse, and then there's a couple of tents where you can go, and I don't know if that's where they can get water or whatever it is, but there's stuff like that going on all the time there, and it's just different because you can't be on the field unless you're a player, so you're kind of watching this from afar. And of course, they're also dealing with the oppressive heat right now, which they're trying to combat, and they need to be outdoors all the time to mitigate COVID-19. So it's not like you can say, hey, go in the clubhouse and sit and relax a little bit. You can once in a while, but you got to be real careful and cognizant of that. And they've done a really nice job of it. Pretty soon, these guys are going to get to the point because they came in such good shape that they're going to say, all right, you know, this practice thing's getting old. We got to play some games. And so I would imagine by about next week at this time, they'll be going, okay, we're back. We're ready. Let's go play some games now.
Maxie, always refreshing having you on the show. Thank you for giving us a break from all of the nasty stuff out there, at least a partial
break.
Yeah,
there's some good
sure
stuff going on, too, so we'll keep reporting. Thanks, Paul.
All right, hang in there, buddy. And thank you. We're out at 57:15. I still have time, don't I? I have time to babble. Life is good. When we come back, a little bit of a rant. I want to share with you part of an email I got after yesterday's show. That's next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.